didn't vote on that, that doesn't mean
Sabrina is also
not eligible.
But we can wait. You know, it wouldn't be a bad thing to hear from Melanie. Maybe text her and say, hey, we started the meeting. Good point. Fair point. We got a minute. Let's do it.
Just a note, the agenda has a different Zoom link on it.
Oh, that's not helpful, is it?
No, it just might confuse some people because David and I were in the other meeting because we opened the agenda and didn't go to the meeting email. So just that might confuse some people.
Who's speaking?
Sabrina Combs.
Okay.
This is Melanie. I'm doing some baggage thing, but I'm listening to you, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Makes
Hi,
us
Melanie.
Feel better. It sort of helps qualify the whole quorum thing. All right, so we're gonna move on, though. I think it's time. Good morning, Emily. I didn't speak to you about this, but it sounds like a great update to hear about. So take it away.
Sorry, I'm just trying to share or start this slide. Hi, I'm Emily Wildman. I am the housing program manager here for Island County. I work at Human Services, and I'm here today to talk about the 5-year homeless housing plan and emergency housing in our community. A lot of us have never thought about this, but where would you sleep tonight if you suddenly lost your housing? What would you pack? Where would your pets go? What would you do with all the rest of your belongings you couldn't put in your car? Households in crisis often cannot access affordable housing quickly. Many of us in this room have resources and people we could call in a crisis. But many people experiencing a housing crisis do not have those resources and they're left to fend for things on their own. So today I want to talk about what the current needs and resources are in Island County. How many people are literally homeless in Island County? Last year's point in time count data gave us 98 people who were currently literally homeless, meaning they were sleeping in their car, in a tent, outside with nowhere to go. Estimates say that the point in time count data is underestimating the actual amount of people who are unhoused and that it is underestimated between 2 and 3 times. So if you take that number and multiply it by 2.5, that means that we have 245 men, women, and children who are unhoused in Island County on any given night. Where can you go in Island County if you're suddenly without housing? We currently have 2 night-by-night shelters. One is The Haven. It has a 30-bed capacity. And we have Ryan's House for Youth, which serves youth ages 18 to 24, and that has 15 beds. So that's 45 beds that we have for somebody in a housing crisis, and we have 245 people roughly that are unhoused in the county. What are the other emergency options that can be accessed? We have emergency shelters that are time limited, so you can stay a certain amount of time. Margie's House, House of Hope, and Harbor Inn. We also have some transitional housing units, Margie's House and Ryan's House for Youth. And again, if you look at those numbers, that is not enough resources for our current needs.
Can I ask a clarifying point?
Sure.
Just to help me understand the differences between these terms. How is an emergency shelter that's time limited different than the overnight, night by night shelter?
So a night by night shelter, you can go and check into on your own. You don't have to have any sort of referral. An emergency shelter and transitional housing, you have to go through our coordinated entry. So you fill out an intake, you get on waiting lists generally, and it is not an immediate solution. So the night by night shelter is the only options where you can go that day, check in, and get shelter. If they're not full, we have had times where those are full and people get turned away. The rest of these are all a longer process. That's an excellent question.
And the time limited means you're if you get in, you'd be allowed to stay for 3 months or a year or something, but then you have to
Exactly.
find other housing.
Exactly. And the goal with these are to find permanent housing, but as we all know, affordable permanent housing on the island is very challenging to come by. And many people don't want to leave the island. They grew up here. They're from here, their kids are in school here, and so it's challenging.
And then the last category, transitional, is like coming out of the incarceration or
No, transitional housing is up to 2 years. So the emergency shelters that are time limited are more like 30 day, 90 day, so they're shorter term.
it's just a longer term.
Transitional housing has a lot more barriers also. So there are barriers to getting into transitional housing. You have to be working or in school, you have to pay part of your income towards it. So there's a lot more barriers. Emergency shelter, there are some barriers, but there are less.
Okay.
For example, the Harbor Inn is the only housing of any sort, emergency housing, that takes pets currently on the island. Margie's House and House of Hope have background checks. So there are some barriers, but fewer. I would say our lowest barrier is the Haven, followed up by Harbor Inn.
Okay.
Are these, excuse me,
I'm
great
done, thank you.
questions. Are these supported by different agencies?
Yes, so Margie's House is supported by, it's owned by the Housing Authority and it's run by Opportunity Council and CADA. And House of Hope is run, and the Haven is run by Would Be Homeless Coalition. And the Harbor Inn is run by the Low Income Housing Institute, Lehigh. And Ryan's House for Youth is run by Ryan's House for Youth.
Thank you.
And Kamano currently has zero shelter options. Many of our unhoused and people in crisis in Kamano are living in this exact kind of situation. They're living in RVs with no utilities that are old and run down, that can't be moved, and they're tucked away. So we don't see them, but they are there. The housing element on the current comprehensive plan update is estimating that in the next 20 years, we need an additional 265 units of emergency housing and 838 permanent supportive housing units. And permanent supportive housing is housing that people can stay in forever, or when they're ready to move, they can move. They're generally, they have some sort of subsidy to help pay. And they have kind of some, they have wraparound services, ideally on site, but if not, at least a case manager that is available to them on a daily basis. Some of them even go up to the point of having people on staff that can ensure that people are taking their medication. And those units are through coordinated entry. So those are for people who are chronically homeless, which means they've been homeless for a year or more, or several times over the last 3 to 4 years that add up to a year, and they have a disability. So we have a lot of people currently on the island who need permanent supportive housing, and we currently only have, I believe, 4 units that are not accessible through coordinated entry. They're run privately through Compass Health. So we have a lot of work to do in that area because a lot of us know that housing is not the only thing that people need. A lot of times, people need a lot more supportive services once they're in housing to stay housed. We get a lot of people into housing who unfortunately just don't have the capacity to remain housed. And so, that permanent supportive housing provides a lot of support services to help those people remain housed long term.
Okay, so when is this? What in how many years are they saying
This
we're
is in
going
the
to?
next 20.
And these numbers were created. How did these numbers get created, or what entity created those numbers?
So these numbers were created through the process of the comprehensive plan. So there was these numbers were generated through a system that I am less familiar
Okay.
with, but Emily Neff knows. And they were agreed upon by at the state and local level. These are the same numbers that are coming out of, I don't know if you guys have seen that spreadsheet with the AMI, the housing needs that are broken down by AMI over the next 20 years. It's broken down to under 30, under 50, under 80, 120
percent of
percentage of area median income. So there, if you look on the very far right, there's the emergency housing numbers. And then the 30% AMI is broken down into permanent supportive housing and non-permanent supportive housing. So a lot of people living at 30% area median income and below don't need permanent supportive housing. They just need housing and they can manage that.
And that would be called affordable housing, right?
Right.
That, just with an income subsidy, but not with this additional support.
Right.
Or not an income subsidy, but a
they would need
subsidy,
yeah,
somehow.
Exactly. So
Section
they would
aid or
exactly,
something.
Or like Brookhaven or Harbor Village. Those are subsidized units for people that are 30% AMI and below. Permanent supportive housing has that same income, but it's also providing that
services.
Support services.
Got it.
And so these numbers are for Whidbey and Camino Island,
correct?
I mean, we don't have to do it now, but I really would be interested to know how these numbers were figured out in the future.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I have seen that spreadsheet, like, recently. Where would I have seen that spreadsheet?
So there's a
comp plan housing unit.
So there's...
We're updating the...
Oh, housing, right. Okay.
You want to speak to that, Emily?
Yeah. Housing.
I mean, let's take a minute here.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's good.
That's the same spreadsheet that has the growth number for
mm-hmm.
the county and
mm-hmm.
everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Emily Neff, long-range planning for Island County. So the countywide planning policies that all of the jurisdictions adopted last year included that spreadsheet that breaks out the housing needs for all of our communities. And so it has Island County's numbers and Coopville's numbers and Langley and Oak Harbor. And all of them have assigned permanent supportive housing numbers and emergency housing numbers. Mm-hmm. And the numbers on the screen, I believe, reflect all of our jurisdictions'
yes.
numbers combined. So I can send that spreadsheet around. It's posted on our website, but it was adopted and ratified by all of the cities and towns and the county last year as part of our mm-hmm. countywide planning policies update.
Is that where you saw it, Molly?
Yeah, I saw it in our housing comp plan element update that we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. And you might
like actually
see
just
your
yesterday.
Numbers. So it looks bigger when you look at countywide numbers.
Yeah. Well, and I guess when I'm looking at the numbers, I was strictly focusing on the percentage of AMI, and I wasn't smart enough to collate that those lower numbers meant specific kind of housing.
Yeah, I mean,
for chronically homeless people.
We've been talking a lot about the affordable housing, and I think this is not getting quite as much discussion yet because we're still focusing on the affordable housing issue that we're facing,
which is more like 60%. I guess the state just made a change for a workforce and lowered it from 80 to 60 as well. So 60% seems to be an affordable housing hotspot lately, and you're talking about 30,
right? So an example of that would be somebody living on Social Security or disability, and they're getting like $1,200 a month.
Yeah, $15,000 a year, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your definition also in
Thank
the past
you.
Year point in time count has defined homeless as if you're sleeping on someone's couch or you're staying with a family member, but that it's not a permanent solution. Do these numbers not include that this year?
They have never included that. So that's HUD mandated. The point in time only counts literally homeless. So that means you're not couch surfing. That means you're in your car outside,
okay,
in a tent or in an RV with no utilities.
Okay.
So the number of people couch surfing who are kind of at that crisis level mm-hmm. aren't included in these numbers.
They're not.
So it's
okay.
An even larger number.
All right.
There's a lot of people that are living in.
And the RV thing is with no utilities. So if you're in an RV with utilities, you don't count?
Correct. You're housed.
Okay.
Even though RVs are not actually
right.
allowed.
Right.
Um,
thank you.
Yes. Great questions. So the Washington State Department of Commerce requires that each local homeless housing task force develop or recommend to its local government a 5-year local homeless housing plan. And this plan is due December 2025. So this is in addition to our comprehensive plan. And this is a plan that really focuses on the 30% AMI and below and people who are unhoused and at risk of losing their housing. So it's taking the housing element and then kind of looking at that under another microscope. And it is a 5-year plan, so it is a bit different than this is a the comp plan is a 20-year plan.
And are you part of this task force?
Yes. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about what this looks
I
like.
know we're stretching this, but does Commerce require that because they're providing funding?
It's legislatively mandated. I mean, I'm sure that plays into it. Yes, they provide funds to address homelessness, and they want to make sure that every community is using those funds. And I'll talk a little bit more about this, but I think they also want to make sure that these plans align. They don't want the homeless housing plan to say something totally different than the housing element in our comprehensive plan. They want this plan to align with cities, with the county, to make sure we're all working together on the same thing, and that our affordable housing funds are going to develop capital projects that are supported in our local comprehensive plans.
Okay, thank you.
So the homeless housing plan was adopted by Commerce. So there's a state plan, and then they've outline 5 required components that local communities have to adopt, and then you're supposed to localize the plan from there. So then you make strategies and goals with those objectives. So the first two are objectives are aligning with other planning. So we want this plan to align with our comprehensive plans in our community. It's going to include estimates of permanent emergency housing needs. So it's going to include some of the same numbers coming out of the comprehensive plan. But it's also bigger. It's not just the housing needs. It's also a day shelter needs and services that are needed by that community. And so they want to get a good idea of what the needs are. They also want to know what our current service levels are. What are we currently providing? What are our current funding sources that we're both using and potential funding that we're using? And we want to make sure that again aligns with all of the local communities. And they want to see that we're planning to prioritize the criteria of our homeless housing capital projects so that they align with what the comprehensive plan is outlining. So if the comprehensive plan is giving a zoning, they're recommending a zoning change. And they want housing built in this area, in this UGA, or they want to make sure that our capital projects are following that so that we're not doing two different things, so that money is maximized in each community. Sorry, I totally got that backwards. So those are the components required of the plan. I'm now going to talk about the objectives, so I apologize. So the objectives that we have to adopt. So what I was just talking about are the things that the plan needs to include. The objectives we have to adopt are promote an equitable, accountable, and transparent homeless crisis response system, strengthen the homeless service provider workforce, prevent episodes of homelessness whenever possible, prioritize assistance based on the greatest barriers to housing stability and the greatest risk of harm, and seek to house everyone in a stable setting that meets their needs. Another part of the plan is the key stakeholder participation and collaboration. And this is a big part of why I brought this to this group, other than just to keep everyone informed. There are certain stakeholders that must be included in this plan. And it's outlined in the RCW. And the two largest cities within the county, which would be Oak Harbor and Coopville, they can basically decide that they want to participate in this plan and have it be county driven, or they can choose to do their own plan and incorporate all of these things. So that is part of the reason that I'm bringing this today, so that you guys can mull this over and think about what you do want to do. When we updated, when we did a five-year plan in 2019, it was a county plan. The cities decided to just participate in the county process and did not want to do their own plan. But obviously, cities have the right to do that if they would like.
So that would be Oak Harbor and
Coopville.
Coopville. Is there somebody from Oak Harbor here? You guys?
Sabrina.
I'm here.
Okay.
So is there, my only question, Emily, is there a timeline for you to get a response from us?
The sooner the better for sure. Okay. But I would say by the end of March.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is this an unfunded study?
Yes.
Okay.
And can you outline what sort of engagement or support is required to participate with Island County's planning?
Yeah, so we're advertising right now on social media and the newspaper and our website to let people know about the plan. We would have a series of meetings to talk about the objectives, start to set goals and strategies. There are some required participants. We have to invite, you know, all the cities. We invite all of our current service providers for housing and emergency services. We have to invite some people with lived experience. So there is a whole kind of, which I can send out after this, there's a whole plan guidance that Commerce gave us to set forth the requirements of who has to be involved. So it is meetings, and then kind of it's a process of adopting things along the way. It'll be collaborative with kind of the housing department. We'll be collecting a lot of the data around funding, what our current estimates are of and what our current services are. And then the group will be discussing kind of how this plan can fit locally and strategies that they see. We can adopt more objectives if people choose. So that's what it looks like. So it'll probably be, I would say, about 5 or 6 meetings over, the plan is due in December. So we'd want it to have it to the commissioners by November. So 5 or 6 meetings, you know, probably about once a month. And there'll probably be some email correspondence, some potential surveys and that sort of thing.
So that's to participate with the county's plan.
Correct.
Okay. So if you were doing your own plan, which we're not, but if we were doing your own plan, you would make up your own schedule of what you're doing.
Yeah, I would send you the guidance and you take it from there. I mean, hopefully we would still be collaborating so that, you know, we're not doing two totally different things. And I wouldn't still invite you to our process, and I would love to be a part of your process, but that.
Just so I get this right, the two largest cities would do their own and the county, so there'd be three, or the correct. Two largest cities do it together?
Well, we can choose to do our own, or we can choose to be a part of
it. I understand, but it potentially could be three separate plans.
Correct.
Okay.
And also, I want people to think about this in relation to, this is a statewide, you know, guidance. So places like King County, you know, they're going to be, have major cities that are going to want to adopt their own plans. Smaller communities, medium-sized communities, it could go either way.
Well, you're right. This is good timing then.
Yes. Yes.
Coopville would like to officially participate with the county.
Okay, great.
You don't have to wait for March for our answer.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Emily, can you send me the guidance?
I sure can.
Thank you.
What? Sorry, was that Sabrina?
Yeah, yes. It was, sorry.
That's okay. And I can also send you the state plan. Any other questions?
You've had some great questions.
Yeah.
And it was a great presentation. We all need to be updated constantly.
Comment, I guess, on just this topic more broadly. I've been reading in the news that Portland and maybe Seattle are kind of the new mayor of Portland, especially, is taking a different approach to homeless issues and focusing more on emergency shelters versus the more expensive, permanent, supported housing to address the more urgent need. Is that the kind of thing that this planning process would come up with? Like, what should Island County's approach be? Like, those trade-offs, where should the most of funding go towards emergency shelters or towards, you know, building permanent supported housing?
So this plan would guide some of that, but ultimately the county commissioners have the ultimate say over kind of where our state funding is directed when it comes to our direct service. But it can guide their decisions for sure. It can form their decisions. But if this group said we want all of our money put only into emergency housing and none into permanent supportive housing, that's unlikely to happen because I don't see the commissioner supporting that viewpoint, and nor would I.
I wasn't necessarily suggesting that.
No, but that's a great example. Yeah. So it's a guide, and it's a guide for the next 5 years. So county commissioners can change, their viewpoints can change. So this is a plan that the community is agreeing on and that we are providing to the commissioners. This is what the community is telling us that we need. And then they can take that in their decision-making to help them guide those decisions.
Thank you.
Yeah. And ultimately there will be an RFP put out in the spring for the state is on 2-year funding cycles for like our emergency shelter services. There'll be an RFP put out because that cycle begins July 1 again. So this plan will not be in place yet for this, but in 2 years, we'll have another round of funding. This plan would be in place and would be able to guide that.
Interesting. All right. Thank you very much.
This is Melanie. I have a comment.
Yes.
Thank you. So, but beyond that, I just want to remind everyone what Emily Neff was responding to the Coopville mayor's question about the spreadsheets. We are mandated through the Growth Management Act to identify our solutions for housing for people that include permanent supportive housing. So we have kind of a different situation than Oregon has. We can't say, well, we're just gonna focus all our attention on emergency housing. We must identify opportunities for a certain number of permanent supportive housing and other types of solutions.
Great, thank you for that. Is there more? All right. We're going to move on. Thank you very much, Emily.
Thank you
for coming.
And Emily, and we'll trade off and bring up Cody Bakken. Is there a... Cody's going to give us a presentation regarding broadband. Maybe some updates.
Hello, esteemed members of the council. Cody Bakken, broadband coordinator for Island County. Let me just get prepared here. All right. So I am providing a broadband update today. So I prepared this just so you know, with the with the perspective that this may not be necessarily something that you know a ton about. So in your packet, I provided a whole lot more slides that I'm going to go over. Those are mostly definitions of different things that we work with so that you can understand. But I do have a short agenda. I'll show you some terms that I'll be using. And then I'll try to go briefly over the different things that we've been doing here in Island County. So terms that I will be using: BEAD program, broadband, BroadLink, BSL, digital equity, FCC fabric, underserved or unserved, and WSBO, affectionately known as WASBO, is the broadband office. So are there any of those terms that you would like me to go into a little bit more detail at this moment?
Well, you're going to go into more detail anyway.
I will go very broad strokes. So if you have a particular term you'd like me to explain, I can definitely.
I'd like you to explain under and unserved.
Okay. So underserved and unserved are locations that unserved would not have connection to broadband services, and underserved would be that's a slightly more nuanced term. They have a connection. It could be a decimal point of speed service, or it could be like 1 kilobyte per second, which is, do you remember back in the 90s when you waited like 10 minutes for a page to load and it was just text? It's slower than that.
The reason I bring it up, Cody, is it seems like if you're going to get grant funding, if you're one of these agencies, there's usually some kind of a matrix. Right. And I'm just wondering, you know, what is underserved so that right. you can make application for a Commerce grant or some right. other grant. So you're saying it's variable, though.
It has changed in definition. The federal government in 2023 was saying that underserved was 25 megabytes download, 2 megabytes upload, which is approximately the speed of DSL. The FCC and the NTIA have since changed that definition to be 100 megabytes download, 20 megabytes upload. And the state of Washington matches that, but we also have legislatively identified the goal of getting to 100 megabytes download, 100 megabytes upload, which is basically what you would consider like gigabyte really super fast, right? That's the kind of speeds that you would find at a public library or something like that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So generally, broadband, defined by the state of Washington, any service providing advanced telecommunications capability and internet access with transmission speeds at or above 100 megabytes download and 20 megabytes upload. So we match the federal government in that definition at this time. But we do have the goal of going beyond that. Broadly speaking, broadband is the infrastructure. When we talk about internet, we're actually talking about the services that you can do, the actions you can do over that connection, going to a site like Amazon or your library or the county or city government or, you know, Netflix or anything like that. That's on the internet. That's the serviceable part of it. Broadband would be the infrastructure, right? The conduits, the towers, whatever it is that physically or wirelessly is connecting you to that service. So Island County applied for support from BroadLink of Spokane, which they are a broadband entity in Spokane County. They live, eat, and breathe broadband. So they are very well equipped to help other counties and other entities get into the nuances of what we need to do to be more prepared at varying levels. It was paid for by the state legislature and administered by the Washington State Association of Counties. So we were able to just get this help from through a grant, and they helped us draft documents, give us guidance, determine what level of involvement we're going to be going forward. All mostly for BEAD, but generally going forward with broadband development. BEAD being the Broadband Equity Accessibility and Development Program from the federal government. That's the one that gives, most states got many millions for broadband development. Washington was one of the 10 or 11 that got over a billion. So we got a lot of money for it because we have a lot of rural areas that are underserved or unserved.
So if I can try to
yes.
summarize here, the Island County has hired this consultant, Broadlink, to help Island County determine a strategy for how to apply for these funds or facilitate other entities to apply for these funds to get our residents broadband.
Right. I would say we didn't hire them. We asked WASAC to hire them.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's a nuanced definition. Yeah. But yes, we've been working with Broadlink, and I've even gone to a conference and got to meet some of those folks in person. They're great people. And I personally and professionally am very thankful for their support in everything that we've done. They've helped me understand my job better, as well as what we're doing here.
Before you move on, mm-hmm. the BEAD acronym, Broadband Equity, BEAD.
Broadband Equity, Accessibility, and Development.
Thank you.
Lots of acronyms, so please feel free to stop me if I use one too many. And Island County had an MOU with Broadlink just to make sure that we had a legal standing on that relationship. So the State Broadband Office released their Notice of Funding Opportunity on November 12th, and it closed on January 31st. So this was round one on that $1.23 billion that the federal government gave the state. And each state kind of, so they are mandated to develop a broadband office, and that will help the state determine how exactly they want to distribute those funds to best serve the more local communities. Washington decided that they were going to do it in rounds of grant application. The first round being your free for all. And then with lots of, you must meet all of these check boxes in order to even qualify to get consideration. So there was a lot, and some entities did consider it relatively prohibitive. Just because you had to get an engineer's certificate on your plans. You had to develop two different budgets, one that was all fiber build, and then one that is a hybrid of technologies. And understandably, a fiber build is just naturally going to be a more expensive budget. So you're submitting two budgets that look vastly different. And some entities, public or private, may not have the capability to do an all fiber build, or may not have the staff time even to develop separate budgets to realistically understand what they look like. So there were definitely some hoops to jump through to do this application. Island County determined that it was not going to be directly involved in this application process. So that was a huge load off my shoulders. but it was also because we want to work closely with the broadband servicers that are in this county already, Comcast, Ziply Fiber, Astound, and WibbyTel.
And they're eligible to apply on their own.
They are.
I think Janet has a comment as well.
Thank you.
Cody is right on, but I just want to clarify a little language. It really wasn't a free for all. It was that the state had a very structured process, but a lot of the rules evolved as we went through the BEAD process. So it was a bit of a was a bit of a process that somehow lacked clarity, sometimes lacked clarity because at the federal, at both BEAD level, local, state, we had sort of constantly evolving rules around this. Island County, the Board of County Commissioners was not inclined, we didn't ever take action, but was not inclined to be a lead entity and become a provider of broadband. But we led the, we continued to lead the effort to make sure that all of our unserved and underserved maps, which Cody will talk about in a moment, the board continued to make sure through the investment in Cody and his time and talent to make sure that every one of our maps had a partner from these ISPs, these internet service providers. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't left as a free-for-all. That made me laugh. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. So one of the benchmarks that was required is that you have that the applying entity had to provide a 25% match, right? And that's, so that is by itself something that could be prohibitive. Public entities that were applying were able to apply for getting that match through the state. The legislature had previously made a promise to make that available. And so there are bills going before the legislature right now.
So they can make two applications. They apply for the overall grant and then they apply for the match from somebody else to match the grant. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it's a separate application.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's all going to the state. So they, and Commissioner St. Clair can definitely clarify on this if she knows more about it, since we're not putting in an application, but a public entity could say, we're expecting this 25% match from the state in our budget. This is how we calculate it in.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think in general, the way they're implementing the BEAD program is that they kind of prefer if a government is the lead entity because there's accountability to the public more than a private company. So they're trying to give you a little boost where if Island County were to lead a project and Ziply were to be the contractor that actually does all the work, but Island County is kind of holding the purse strings, then that project could get an additional 25% of
so funding. The private, if one of the private companies you battled off can't do that, then they can't?
I think they have to provide their own 25%.
Okay,
that's right. That's that is correct.
The clarity on yeah. So they can't. A Whidbey Tell or somebody else can't get that match. They have to come up with it themselves.
Right.
All right. That's good.
Well, they're not obligated to secure match. They're just not eligible for the additional 25% match. They then have to build a application that is fully funded through BEAD and their own efforts. Actually, that's not true. I think they do have to have their own match.
Yeah, so they would just have to show in their application
right.
that they were going to contribute 25% toward whatever. I was just curious if they're getting it back. So
yeah, but they can't.
We don't. Yeah. Let's move on, Cody. Thank you, Janet.
As I said, we didn't put in an application, but in the hypothetical where Island County was wanting to involve that 25% match amount from the state legislature, we would have been the lead entity applying for a project area and then partnered with one of the broadband servicers in this county to do a lot of that work, because we don't have the staff, the manpower, the know-how to do that. So we would definitely have contracted with them, but we would have been the lead entity to get that.
And that's generally similar to what the Port of Coopville is doing on our broadband project, but it's not BEAD funding, it's different grant programs.
Yeah, and I'd like to hear about that too, maybe a different day, maybe even next month. You could give us a short summary.
Yeah, I think we should have everything ready.
Would that be a good time?
Yeah.
That'd be a great follow-up on this. Go ahead, Cody, we're gonna run into time. Issues.
So just some numbers to blow past right here. Statewide, there were 215,000 broadband serviceable locations. Those are individual locations that need to be connected into that network. Generally, that definition is going to be a habitable structure, whether it's an apartment complex with multiple units, single family home, a duplex or triplex. So those kinds of buildings generally are what we were talking about. There are some small business locations that would be an exception. Something that's going to get a large amount of enterprise level service, that would not be considered a broadband serviceable location for that definition.
So this 215,000, these are the number of locations, mostly homes, that are covered under current applications?
Yes.
That
were eligible for.
Washington has quite a bit more homes than that, but
yes.
These are just the ones that were eligible.
Yes.
For an application.
Yes.
Okay.
And then in Island County,
because they're underserved.
Yes.
Okay.
154,000 of those being unserved completely.
Oh, right.
Right. So Island County has about 3,500 of these locations alone. None of them were considered high cost, meaning you had to, you know, climb a mountain to get to Joe Schmo's cabin kind of a thing. But we still had a large number of them in just on our two islands. On our four islands we have. Because we have one on, it's not Strawberry Island. Anyways, yes, we have a fair number. So there were four project areas for Island County. This is North Camino. It's a smaller area geographically, but they were broken down by hexes. And then the project area itself is not covered by the hex. It's just how they used it for the map. The project area is more like a skeleton kind of in between the locations. So if imagine kind of just like the roads, it would be the connect the dots kind of a thing. I don't know why they didn't make the maps like that. That would have been more useful, I think. So North Camino had 714 locations. South Camino had 565 locations. North Whidbey had 1,197 locations because that reached all the way to the south end of Coopville. And then South Whidbey had 893 locations. So that's just south of Freeland all the way down to the tip. And then I have is broken out in two different ways, but this slide and the next slide are basically the same information. They're just, this one is showing each project area, which broadband servicer put in an application for that area. So we had three on South Camino and three for South Whidbey, two for North Camino and two for North Whidbey. And this way you can see Ziply applied for those North and South Camino and South Whidbey. Whidbeytel applied for South Camino, South Whidbey, and North Whidbey, and Astound applied for all four project areas. So a little bit separately from the BEAD program, which feels like all-encompassing, I am working on developing a broadband or a broadband layer for our ICGO map, where there's publicly available information about various parts of the county. And this would be publicly available when it's completed. I'm following the same process that the NTIA and FCC had to develop their national fabric. And so you can see the different icons here show different data sets that I'm pulling information from. So building footprints, FCC identified location, Google Maps address matching, ICGO address points, county parcel boundaries, and more information. We take all of that to layer it together to identify, is this a home? Is this a mother-in-law house that's, you know, unattached? Is this, a library? Is this a school? Is this a dog house? Is it a shed? You know, like all of those kinds of things. So we can identify, like, well, anything that is smaller than, you know, this size building footprint is probably not going to be habitable by federal definition. So we're going to discount that automatically. And then we cross-reference that with address points and other data. So this is one hex from...
I mean, in addition to just the size of the footprint, the ICGO also has all the assessor information about what type of structures, whether they're habitable or not.
Yes, and I've gone through that database. That took a couple months.
So I'm just curious about this in a map form versus the raw data form. It seems like the raw data form might be more useful for getting down to the nuts and bolts. Is the map for people like us so that you can demonstrate what you're
yes.
talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
So for BEAD and for BSL data generally, because this has locations on it that are both BEAD qualified and not BEAD qualified, that's the hex indicates that there is at least one location here, but I didn't want to point it out because it does show real addresses. So this is demonstrating what you can layer over on ICGO. So we would have the BSL point showing up.
So this is basically how you came up with the numbers.
Yeah.
All right, can we move to the next? We're going to run
yes.
out of time here. And actually, I kind of like to go back to you had a list of companies that were applying for those grants. When are the grants awarded, or have they been?
So the grant window just recently closed.
Okay.
And the State Broadband Office is working on determining qualifications.
So they haven't been
those.
Awarded yet.
They haven't been awarded.
Okay.
They won't be awarded until probably next month, hopefully.
Okay.
But then they have to assemble all of that information into a state plan.
But at least at that point, we'll know who's got what award and who may be going to work in what area. All right, go ahead and move on. I'm sorry to push it, but I am.
So other projects, so FiberCloud with WubiTel has an RUS grant for South Camino. Ziply Fiber got an ARPA broadband grant from Island County for an area in North Camino. And then the Port of Cookeville has a middle mile grant from a public works board, and they're working with Ziply Fiber, which is what you were talking about for next
yeah.
month.
Great.
And then there are some areas that we identified that didn't get into the BEAD list. We're working on getting that rectified so that they are properly served.
I think one of the reasons he was bringing up the maps is because the federal map had all kinds of errors in it, and that's what they're basing.
Which had errors in it?
The federal map
oh,
that the FCC
yeah.
created,
because okay.
they don't know the difference right. between a doghouse and what speed internet people have and stuff.
Okay.
So he's
so,
trying to fix
so
the
his
maps.
Is going to be a bit more accurate than, and
yeah.
he was showing us why.
It'll be
yeah.
locally accurate.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. Welcome, Commissioner Johnson.
Sorry, I heard this.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Cody. And maybe we'll have you back too. But next month, maybe we'll get a little report.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be
yeah.
great. So I think Megan sent out this letter of support that Oak Harbor is promoting for House Bill 1791. Does Sabrina want to speak to that? We've got about 2.5 minutes, but we can do this. Maybe.
Yeah,
some...
I can actually speak to that. My name is David Goldman. I'm the Deputy City Administrator and Finance Director for the City of Oak Harbor, and I'm joining you live from Olympia, Washington. So House Bill 1791 is a REIT flexibility bill. And just to give you an update, I was watching the House Finance Committee, and they just voted it out of committee, so it's going to the floor. I guess starting next week, they're going to start looking at bills that have made it to the floor of the House, and then after the House, it goes to the Senate. To recap real quickly, what this bill does is it restores the flexibility that was in place in the law between 2021 and 2023. The flexibility expired. They tried to revive it last year with a bill that had like a lot of stuff in it, but some of that stuff turned out to be controversial, so it ended up dying. So this bill that we worked very closely with Representative Dave Paul on just looked at the technical flexibility type fixes. And what it basically does is local governments have a REIT 1 and a REIT 2. That's 0.25% on the sales price of any real estate transaction. The state of Washington has their own real estate excise tax as well. But this is just the local one that pretty much all counties and all cities have in the state of Washington. There's different things you can use REIT 1 for and different things you could use REIT 2 for. During that period of flexibility, they were equalized. And this bill simply just equalizes it again, which means that like for REIT 1, you could use it for public safety facilities, city hall type facilities, utilities, water, wastewater, storm drain, solid waste, just a lot of different types of things. REIT 2 is a lot stricter. What this will do is just restore the flexibility to allow everything in REIT 2 to be used, everything that's in REIT 1 to also be used for REIT 2, which will provide a lot more flexibility to cities and counties. And keep in mind, this is not increasing any taxes. This is not a new tax. This is just simply allowing cities and counties throughout the state of Washington to utilize money they already collect a lot more flexibly to serve the needs of the community.
So who would lose? Is there anybody that would lose on this particular change?
I can't really see it. I think there's like there's some kind of exemption for low-income housing or housing to serve homeless folks that was added on it as an amendment by the chair this today. That might be a very slight thing that's in the bill. But as far as everything else goes, it just looks like a really good bill that equalizes everything, and it looks like a win-win for everybody.
Thank you. That was great information. And what was your comment? I'm sorry.
Dedicated sources of funding for different activities.
So that's where the money's coming from, is the sales, right? So anyway, that was for your information. You all have an opportunity to respond or have your groups or municipalities respond in the way you want. I just felt like this board, that's what this board's for, is to share this kind of information. Any comments or questions for, you've already forgotten your name, sir.
David. David Goldman.
David, any questions for David? All right. Thank you.
Thanks for bringing this to our attention.
We have minus 1 minute for other items, but I want to take that minute anyway. If somebody has something they'd like to share. Hearing none, this meeting's adjourned. How about that?